The people of central Minnesota can count a good number of origins when it comes to the cultural heritage of this area. One group in particular, however, stands out with its selflessness and thoughtfulness when it comes to the fate of their fellow human beings. This would be the Sisters of the Order of Saint Benedict. Arriving in central Minnesota over 150 years ago, their tradition dates back nearly 1,500 years. If you were to walk the streets of St. Joseph today and pause a bit to look at the passerbys, you'd probably notice them. You might consider them to be peaceful, humble, quiet, and observant little old ladies, and they are, but their actions shout at a volume very few of us would attempt to achieve in our lives. While they take their journeys through life just like we do, one step at a time, these journeys have taken some of the sisters to incredible places and times. Currently at the Hayne Museum on the St. Benedict campus, there is a detailed exhibit about the journeys taken by some of the sisters as they went to China in the years just prior to World War II. It's called, in their own words, Mission to China and Taiwan, 1930 to 2010, 80 years of ministry among the Chinese. Recently, I sat down with Sister Moya Wild and Sister Dolores Super to talk about the exhibit and the mission of the sisters. It's a pleasure sitting down with both of you this morning. Could you please tell us who you are and what is your connection to this exhibit?
I'm Sister Moira Wild, and I'm director of our Hayne Museum, which is in our Art and Heritage Place at St. Benedict's Monastery, St. Joseph, Minnesota. We plan one major exhibit each year, and this year it's the story of our sisters going to China in 1930, so 80 years ago. Our sisters made the big move to go to China to work with women in China, and the story continues to unfold even to this day.
And I'm Sister Dolores Super, and I assist Sister Moira in some of the research for various parts of the exhibit. And this year I wanted... I'm so intrigued by what was their daily life like during these, particularly these 18 years that they were in China before being forced out. And so I asked if I could, what did she think about doing a presentation on In Their Own Words? And so I spent a number of months reading letters, hundreds of letters during those years, and trying to select out pieces of them so that we could tell the story, as I said, in their own words.
I guess starting out, what motivated them to go to China in the first place?
Well, that's an interesting story. The Benedictine monks had gone to China in the early 1920s in response to a request from Rome to establish a Catholic university for the Chinese people. And so the Benedictine monks had begun this Catholic university and had been running it for a few years, but it was only for men in terms of enrollees. And very early came to the realization there does need to be a division for women also. We also need to accept women in this university. And again, working through Rome, they sent a representative to talk to all of our sisters to see if in fact some of our women could be the ones to establish this university. We were very large, probably the largest at that point, community of Benedictine women, and we were engaged in education and had the college, and so we specifically were asked if we would respond to that request.
Mm-hmm. And so they did. And as I recall, nearly 100 sisters volunteered.
That's right.
For
wow.
This mission, and 6 were chosen. And they, how to prepare for that. They knew nothing about China. But they went and left on August 31st, 1930, and arrived in Peking, Beijing, on September 25th, 1930. And there's where the story begins. As Sister Moira said, the sisters went to open a women's section of the university in Peking, and they realized that they needed to do some preparatory work, and so they enrolled women for 3 years that would be ready in 3 years to start university work. But we had been, at this was the time of the Depression, The sisters had just built St. Cloud Hospital. We had a tremendous debt. And the bishop of our diocese encouraged us to go to China and said that the diocese would help. And we said, well, the community said, we can support the sisters, but we can't support all the work. And I don't think the sisters realized then they had to find the quarters, they had to buy the books, they had to pay for the faculty. So it was a burden. So eventually they needed to turn that over to another community. They did not want to leave China. And see, they were invited to go to Kaifeng, another city that needed social services. They needed nursing care, and they needed education. Very few of the youngsters there had an opportunity to go to school. So that's what they did. And that is when they encountered the Sino-Japanese War and were very instrumental in that war effort to assist both Chinese refugees and Chinese soldiers coming back from the front. That occurred until 1941 when the World War II started, and then they were put into concentration camps. That lasted until 1945. And in 1945, some of them were able to return to Kaifeng and to begin to reestablish themselves in their convent, which had been quite demolished.
Heavily damaged during
the war. And as we know, Mao Zedong was on the march with communist troops, and they were one of the last missionaries to leave Kaifeng. They fled to Shanghai in 1948. So the story, their life in China was from 1930 to 1948. And we know the historical facts, but what did they do in all those years, and how did it affect their daily lives? And that's the story I wanted to tell.
And that's the story that the exhibit that is here at St. Benedict's, that's the story it's telling, those little small things. There's photographs, a few photographs, the clothing, the
various artifacts, yes. Well, as I said, they landed in Peking in 1931, and this is what Sister Rachel says as they're riding on the train. "We saw the outside walls of Peking today. None of you will ever know till you experience it just how one feels coming into an entirely new world. Next week we begin studying the language. Please write us. Say anything just so you write." Which I thought was kind of poignant. They were homesick. And then another sister writes, "We started language study today. Our teacher refuses to tell us a thing in English, so we either sink or swim. We have received no papers from home. A St. Cloud Times would look mighty fine to me." And so, again, they were missing everything. But I think I just have to tell you the story of the cook. One of the sisters, Sister Regia, was their cook and homemaker. And she said this. They had been in China about less than a month. "I tried to get a chicken for dinner. I had an awful time. I called up and said I wanted a chicken and how many pounds. The butcher wanted to know what kind of chicken, so I tried to explain as good as I could. Finally, he asked if I wanted a dead one. I said yes, so I thought it was pretty clear now, but he called again and wanted to know if I wanted an English chicken or a Chinese chicken. Well, I could hardly keep from laughing. I asked him if there was any difference, and he said yes, so I said, send an English one. An hour later, he called again. He didn't have an English one. So I said, send a Chinese one. At last, we got it, and it looked just like an American chicken." But that Sister Regia often added the humor into their lives when it got kind of not so pleasant. And so the sisters were looking for all sorts of ways to make a little money so that they could live there. And Sister Donalda, who later came, when she came back, taught at Cathedral High School here in St. Cloud, she suggested a way. She said, "The students ask continually when a music teacher is coming. I have been asked to give piano, violin, and mandolin lessons." And so eventually we did send a music teacher, Sister Ursuline, but that was a few years later. But Sister Regia, her own little way, tried to help out. They lived in a compound where each of the sisters' bedrooms was a little cottage, and it had a dirt floor, and it didn't have a stove until later into the season. So she says this. I love it that she writes all these things home. One thing I tried this year was brandied apricots, which is very good when a person gets chilled. In fall, before we put up the stoves, our sleeping rooms are very damp and cold. This heats you up right away. Isn't that dear? She was dear. So after they had graduated three classes, which were preparatory, and these women were ready to move into the university, they realized they had to move on. And so another group took over that, and they moved to Kaifeng. And Sister Donalda came back to the States. But the five of them were left were very excited to move on. And everything seemed so good that new sisters came, a nurse and a music teacher, and the sisters began teaching in the university, which was quite new for them. I'm sure it was quite new for China. They gave piano lessons and violin lessons. They opened a primary school. They provided health in the dispensary. And Sister Regia, in many letters, is highly praised for her peanut butter, which she makes out of the local crop. But it was not all to last. One of the sisters, Sister Rachel, who loved to grow things, she was always talking about the beauty of China, the beauty of the shrubbery, the flowers. But she says this about Kaifeng, which almost seemed prophetic. We went to the major seminary outside the city walls. Along the way, I was struck by the many and rich burial grounds, beautiful graves of evergreens. The arrangement of these groves is very symmetrical. I decided that, after all, this soil is good for something. Well, yes, it was. Sister Rachel, after a very short illness, died. She took ill at a time, and it was impossible to get the doctor because the city gates were closed. And they finally got her to the hospital, but the infection she had spread, and it was just too much for her, and she died in 1937. Evidently a very beautiful, but I'm sure a very heart-wrenching experience for those sisters. But she's buried in that soil that she said was good for something.
You're listening to 88.1 FM KVSC and a feature on the Sisters of the Order of St. Benedict's current exhibit at the Hayne Museum. In their own words, mission to China and Taiwan. Sister Dolores Super continues with the story.
But the next very big thing was the Sino-Japanese War. And the sisters put up a flag, an American flag, over their compound. And we have an American flag raised in the exhibit. And they hoped the Japanese pilots would see it and spare them because they were not at war with Japan. But here's what they experienced. This is Sister Francetta. The sirens send creeps through us, especially when they sound the short and long, which means close danger. During these times, we say our prayers fervently, for one never knows when we will pray again, should a bomb be dropped on us. I can assure you that the tense feeling is awful, but oh, how grateful we are when at last the all-safe siren gives the signal. And Sister Ronane, who went every day to teach at the university, said, I pray on my way to the university every morning, some for China, but quite a bit for me. I'm always afraid that the siren will blow when I'm in school. If it does, then I can't get home in time. One day I was halfway home, and when the siren sounded, I never had such quite rough, nerve-wracking rickshaw ride, people and animals and cars dashing around in every direction. War is truly a scourge. And that went on for some months, and Kaifeng did fall to the Japanese army, and the sisters, they were very afraid. They said, Sister Francetta says, what will take place if when the city is occupied is hard to say. We have heard the most harrowing accounts of torture in other cities. May God spare us these ordeals. And then occupation did come, and at first they couldn't mail, but eventually they could, and that we don't know all about that story, but Sister Francetta says, "Please, dear mother, do not reproach yourself on not having called us home. We would have been the saddest sisters to leave here when it was most important for us to stay." You could tell their lives were intertwined with the Chinese. The very last letter that they wrote home before the beginning of World War II, which was in December 1941, is dated November 27, 1941. But written on that letter in pencil is, "This letter arrived January 18, 1943 in St. Benedict." So where that letter was and how it was traveling around the world, we don't know. But that letter recounts the murder of their beloved bishop and several missionaries not far from them in a village. And at that mass, that requiem mass that was for that they said for these bishop and priests, the celebrant said this, "If one should have a choice, it would be a wonderful grace to die as they did. Every missionary must be prepared to take what is in his parcel." And then Sister Francetta says, "We wonder what is in ours. Please pray for us. Everything is so uncertain. However, we know that a kind providence watches over us, so we await the will of God in all things." You know, would that we all had that kind of faith. That was in November 27th, you know, less than how many days after that?
2 weeks at the most.
Not even two weeks.
The war,
and they were taken out and put into concentration camps. And no letters. Mm-hmm. Nothing. The Red Cross in St. Cloud, headed by Al Chumperlin, tried to help us and wrote countless letters to the State Department, even wrote to the Swiss Embassy, which was neutral. Could they find out where our sisters were? Were they alive? Think of the uncertainty and not knowing. But eventually, and we did know that, and we tell some of that story in the museum, but we don't have it from their letters. So we need to go over that, leave that part of it in telling this story. But on August 17th, 1945, when they were in confinement, they were in Peking by that time, they heard planes going over them and over the compound and didn't know what that was all about. And then, like snow, leaflets dropping. And those leaflets were the American troops telling them the war was over and they should stay where they are. We will come and get you. And Sister Francetta writes to, by August 27th, she's able to get a letter through the American soldiers. And she says to this back here home, "Peace and greetings. My dears, concentration camp days are over, and you cannot adequately understand how our hearts swelled and our throats choked when we sang the Te Deum on hearing that peace had come. Four of our military came to call. We had a good visit with Major Ray Nichols and time enough to talk over the big events of the day." And that must have been just an incredible experience. One of the soldiers who was at their release and became good friends of theirs said, "I have never seen such good young spirits in old frames." And so after that, you often hear them refer to themselves as those old frames. But that was not to last. They went back to Kaifeng, but it wasn't, maybe for 2 years, trying to rebuild from the war, trying to reestablish themselves in that big building they had built that had been quite demolished, and did, But they, you hear them say such things in their letters as, the situation in China is tense and uncertain. The civil war is still undeclared and still going on. Many missionaries have been driven from their stations and have lost everything but what they could carry with them. That was in 1946. They did stay on until almost the end of December in 1947. Well, actually, spring 1948. But this is what's in the letters again. The siege on Kaifeng came without warning. Most of the foreigners are leaving. We likewise will have to leave while there is still a chance. Please pray for us, as this is our darkest hour in China. God knows it was hard enough to come to China, then to be forced out by the Japanese and the horrors of that war. This is just about all we can stand. My heart is heavy as lead. And then she says, don't worry about us. God will see us through, for we lean on him. That's an incredible story. And then they are flown to Shanghai, barely escaping the communist army. And Sister Regia, who it seems often had a very light-hearted word, wrote, those days before we left Kaifeng were hard days. It was not easy to leave our home. This is the second time that our dear Lord asked this sacrifice of us. But after I had read all these letters, I came upon a statement given by Sister Ronayne 25 years after they first went, and it made so much more sense to me, knowing what they had gone through, and I'd like to read that statement. Looking back over 25 years, we realize vividly that here we have no lasting home. It seems that this quarter has taught us to live just one day at a time. We have no leisure to regret the past, and there is no use worrying about the future. We try to do our allotted tasks just for the day, and leave all, past, present, and especially the uncertain future, in God's loving hands. I thought, what a message for us. We live in trying times. It's a wonderful message. So I think we need to give a lot of gratitude to these women who faced so many hardships and did it so beautifully, so gracefully, so courageously, and we're grateful.
Yeah, and the exhibit is definitely full of many of those examples. Yes. Many of those, not just what they endured during this time, but then also what has come out of it
right
since then.
Yes.
It's, you know, they passed through something and then all of a sudden, well, okay, well, now, yes, we are starting again. Well, mm-hmm. What has happened? There are many examples of these small, little, minute details that have flourished into other people's lives, I guess.
Yes.
Well, could you tell me about maybe one or two of those, like some of the relationships that have developed since
and continue.
And continue to this day?
Well, many flowers have come from this, starting in mainland China. And as of today, as a result of the start that these women made in 1930, we today have an independent monastery in Taiwan of native women, and we have an independent monastery in Japan, also of native women. And so those have been two very significant flowerings of their first efforts. And then in terms of mainland China, the College of St. Benedict has established many connections over there with faculty and student research exchanges. Sister Dolores herself, who has done these readings, has been there teaching in Southwest University. And well, I think one example, this last school year, for example, we had 99 Chinese students on this campus. And I think a lot of it goes back to some of these very first inroads that were made 80 years ago by our sisters. It's been that story, as I said at the very beginning, this story really does continue to unfold. Mm-hmm. And they certainly didn't know what got set in motion by their mm-hmm. first traveling
there.
Tell
the story of that young woman, of that child.
Well, one of the most thrilling experiences that we've had is, as a result of this exhibit, one of the big ministry areas that we did in Taiwan was to establish an orphanage. There were abandoned children, there were orphan children, and the sisters saw that that was one of the biggest things that they could do to help in this was in Taipei. And so they had they built a special building for an orphanage. They expanded it to accommodate just as many as they could. They took children from the time of birth until about age 5. Then other arrangements needed to be made for these children because there were more that needed to be accommodated in the younger years. Well, we had the wonderful experience this summer of having one of these infants that was in the orphanage come and visit us here at this exhibit and see the very pictures that she is on. When she was born, she was a twin, actually, and her brother died at birth, her little brother, and her mother died about 10 days after she was born. So she was really without a place to be, and the relatives, the families were just not able to step forward and care for her. So this little girl was literally put in a box and taken to the dump. Just a pathetic situation. Well, her grandmother was just having such pangs of anxiety about this that she went to this dump to look for this little box. And lo and behold, this little girl was still alive. She hadn't died over the night as they had expected would happen. And so this grandmother picked up the box, and she had some friends who knew about the sisters in Taiwan who had this orphanage. So through her influence, they brought this child to the orphanage, and the sisters literally brought her back to life because she was in very weakened condition. Well, one of the sisters, who is Sister Anelda Wall, was really in charge of the orphanage. And like I said earlier, once they got to be 5 years old, another home was needed they needed to be placed in another home. So Sister Anelda arranged for her brother here in Minnesota to adopt this little girl, which he did, and raised her here in Minnesota. She even came here to college for a year, then discontinued. But 30 years later, this little girl made contact with one of the sisters who was in the orphanage and who lives in Minneapolis-St. Paul area, and reconnected, and together they came to visit the exhibit and tell the story of just an amazing, it still gives me goosebumps when I think about it, how this little girl was brought to life and was able to come here and reconnect and tell this whole story.
Wow, that is just amazing. And that's one of many small examples within this exhibit. Well, will there be another kind of presentation, another, I don't want to call it a performance, but that's almost kind of what it is.
Well, we do have one special event planned through Stern's History, History Research and Museum area on September 29th. There will be a special presentation, and it will be Sister Dolores Super sharing some of things that she has gleaned from letters. And there will be a presentation at Stern's History at 9:00 on September 29th. Anybody is welcome, and to continue to tell more of these stories.
All right.
And in their own words, which makes it very special.
And if somebody wanted to come out here to see the exhibit, what are your hours that you're open for that?
And we're open, our regular hours are Tuesday through Friday from 10 until 4. And then on Saturday and Sunday, we're open from 1 until 3:30. There is no admission charge. We are on a first floor level, so we're easily accessible. And we just welcome all guests and visitors. We're our location is in the Art and Heritage Place, which is a combination of Whitby Gift Shop and Hayne Museum. May be a little more familiar if we say both of those entities.
And directly across the square from the monastery, I believe.
Correct. Yep.
In St. Joseph.
Well,
thank you both for speaking with me today and sharing this incredible story.
Well, thank you. It was nice to do that. I think the more people who know the heritage, of the background of people in this area, how worldwide it is, it's a wonderful story.
Once again, more information on In Their Own Words, Mission to China and Taiwan, including video and blog discussions, can be found on their website at sbm.osb.org. under the History/Hayne Museum tab on the left of the page. And this can also be linked to off of our website at kvsc.org under the podcast's features link. Also, for more information on the museum, you can give them a call at 320-363-7098. This report was made possible through the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and was produced by KVSC, a proud member of Independent Public Radio.